Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We're about to have a conversation with Doug Gansler, who, of course, is the Maryland's Attorney General. Before we do that, speaking of banking, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. You can go to www.mecu.com. Remember, it is a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. MECU.com, or you can go to steinershow.org, click on their banner, which is right there, and all the information will be there as well. Doug Gansler joins us here in our first hour. We should be joined shortly also by Marceline White, who's Executive Director of the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition. But Doug is in studio, and welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So we'll start off with, as folks, as you know, a $25 billion deal was struck with banks by 49 of our 50 attorneys general in this state, in this country. Some people say it's a sliver of $700 billion in negative equity in our nation's housing market. Maryland gets close to $1 billion of that money. What we'll do with it, we'll talk about, and what this deal means. You can join us here, 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And we'll get these calls. If you want to call us, please join us here. But when we have a chance, someone can come across the screen, because my screen is empty here, so I can't see the callers. 410-319-8888. So, Doug, talk about this deal and the making of it. You were in the thick of things as this negotiation was going on, because you and several other of the attorneys general, especially in New York and California, were pushing for greater fines from the banks and pushing them even harder, or maybe even criminal charges. But talk about what went on.
Yeah, it was. This is actually the largest partnership agreement settlement in the history of the United States between the federal government and the state government. So what happened was, if you remember back in October of 2010, the whole robo signing revelations came to light, that
right.
People were actually literally, as ridiculous as it might seem, being thrown out of their houses by machines or that were signing the foreclosure documents without any consideration of the particular situation. That led to an investigation both by the federal authorities as well as individual states' attorneys, a general, into the banking practices. And much more was exposed, including the targeting of minorities, the subprime lending, the taking people who otherwise would have qualified for a regular loan and putting them in the subprime market, and really contributed greatly to the the conduct of the banks really contributed greatly to the foreclosure crisis, which contributed significantly to the economic downturn in this country.
Right.
So we looked into this and we tried to figure out, okay, what are we going to do about this? And trying to get all 50 attorneys general together on something is always difficult. And
Republicans and Democrats.
Well, exactly right. And I'm the president elect of the National Association of Attorneys General, NAG. And so we started to get involved in it, and a number of states thought, well, this is good, this is not good, and we kind of really trying to get 50 attorneys general representing different states, Republican and Democrat, as well as the federal government. And we certainly, at least very much toward the end, Sean Donovan of HUD, the Secretary of HUD, was very involved. Tom Prelli, the top civil guy over at Justice, and Eric Holder was very involved. And we finally hammered out a deal. And when you talked about sort of our reluctance, you know, if you remember just a couple of months ago, the deal was at $5 billion. And I think some of the holdouts, including ourselves in Maryland, really led to a better deal and got to a point where it was almost too good to believe the deal that we ended up getting. Now, the downside for Maryland is we were disproportionately affected by the foreclosure crisis, and we had a disproportionate number of folks either foreclosed upon or were on the brink of foreclosure. The good news is we were the sixth highest state in terms of the money that came from the settlement to Maryland. As you mentioned, it was almost $1 billion.
Right, right.
And we actually get more money than New York. I mean, that was how affected we were. And what we gave up was almost nothing. I mean, if you think of the attorneys general in the beginning, the two areas that we don't have jurisdiction over are federal national banks, you know, federalized national
right.
banks, as well, and credit cards. So we had a very thin sliver of jurisdiction, but we were able to get this settlement right now. And there's, you know, we could talk about what it means and what it is. There's a lot of attractive components of it. The most immediate is that the victims of these banks are going to get imminent relief, direct relief to them, and the banks are being held accountable for this conduct, which I think was essential for us.
So, I mean, what is it, though? I mean, just the politics of it for a minute. We'll come back to some of the – I want to get to the concrete measures affecting the state. But one of the things that many papers reported was there was a lot of lobbying and push from the White House and from Eric Holder to convince the attorneys general, or the number of them, some say including you and people in New York and California, who were reluctant to take a deal because you thought more had to be done, that process was happening as well.
Yeah, there were two components. One was the amount of money. What was the relief going to be? How much were they really going to put on the table? Was it the $5 billion or were we going to get closer to $25 billion? The second, which was really the sticking point for a very long time, was the securitization component. What these banks were doing, where they were taking these subprime loans they knew were not going to be satisfied in terms of people actually being able to comply and meet their requirements, packaging them together and then selling them to institutionalized investors, individual investors,
right,
pension systems,
bundling
and the like.
Bundling the mortgages.
Bundling the mortgages. And the banks wanted us to waive that as part of the settlement. We did not want to do that. I did not want to do that. I thought that would be inappropriate and that would take what's a very, very good deal and make it not so good. So what we ended up waiving here are only state claims and federal claims regarding origination of loans and servicing of loans, and that's all we waived. And the origination of loans, most of the companies that were originating these loans are no longer around anyway, and to the extent they are, the statute of limitations has run. And in terms of the servicing of loans, part of this agreement has literally 42 pages of industry practice that's going to be put into the future so these banks won't be able to wreak havoc upon us again in this regard. What we did not waive was the securitization that I just mentioned, which was essential. Any MERS claims, that was the transfer of documents without actually transferring title to those documents. Any fair housing claims, any criminal claims, we can bring all our criminal claims. And what people have to understand is we didn't waive anybody's individual rights. That is, anybody who was foreclosed upon as a result of the fraud of the banks and can show that certainly can bring their own claims. We don't have the jurisdiction or the ability to limit their own action in the future.
But I mean, the reality is also that an individual, anybody in this room or anybody across the glass here, wouldn't have the money to take on a bank.
Right.
I mean, that couldn't happen. That's not. I mean, that part of the problem in the beginning was that the banks had started pushing people into foreclosure. Many people think illegally pushing people into foreclosure with the robo signatures and other ways as well. And all these people lost their homes. So, I mean, that's not really addressed here.
Well, right? It's not addressed here at all, and nor do we have the ability to address it for them because they have an individual claim. But we, with a sliver of jurisdiction, we were able to get remedies for people that have been foreclosed upon and those on the brink of foreclosure. And that's what we were, you know, very happy to be able to do. And you know, it's not a perfect solution, but it's a pretty good one for what we waived. So, you know, if we hadn't stepped in and done this deal and really worked on the banks and really held them over the coals here, nobody would have. And, you know, it clearly wasn't getting done. And so I think it's a real good example. This is the biggest thing attorneys general have done since the tobacco litigation. But it's a very different agreement than that. I mean, we're still getting
– a lot less money too.
A lot less money. We're still getting $160 million a year from the tobacco settlement in 1998.
Right.
What's interesting about this is, I'm sure you're shocked to find out, I don't have a high level of trust of the national banks. But the way this agreement is structured, their incentives are the same as ours, and that is to get the money out and get the money out quickly. So that if they don't get it out in the first year, their charge is higher. They penalize more. And the whole deal lasts 3 years in total. And so and by the way, I should mention, this is only dealing with five banks. That's very important because this is only for people whose loans were serviced by Bank of America, Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan, Citi, and GMAC.
Right.
And what we're going to do next is go after the next nine banks, and that'll once we have, and they'll have a settlement structured very similar to this. We'll then be over $1 billion. We'll have the biggest 14 banks. We'll have almost all of the loans that are not covered by Fannie or Freddie, Because
in California, that's 62% of all loans.
Right.
So what is that here?
Of the Fannie Freddie, about two-thirds.
Same thing here.
Yeah, and the federal, we have no jurisdiction over Fannie and Freddie. The federal government will have to handle that.
Let's get some calls. You want to
start
that? 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can join us. Attorney General Doug Gansler is with us, one of the leading attorney generals in the country, making this settlement with the banks. We're talking about the political ramifications of the settlement. Did it go far enough? Where does the money go that we do get? How can it affect you if your home is underwater? That you can get some mortgage relief by having your principal reduced? How's that going to work? 410-319-8888 is the number here. And the money that goes to people who have actually been foreclosed upon. Let's go to Darnell. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Very welcome, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, I'm so glad y'all are talking about this because I just no longer 42 minutes ago, just got off the phone with Wells Fargo because my aunt told me about this whole thing. And I asked them, because I just went through a loan modification. And they said, well, that's what we did for you. I said, well, the settlement just got passed. In a nutshell, he told me the settlement is only going to delve out like $75 per household that goes through this because they have so many millions of mortgages they have to deal with. And I was like, my mortgage is like $2,400, and the loan modification took me down to $2,300. I said, that's not helping me at all because I was 3 months behind, and I'm going to end up being 3 months behind again because in my hardship letter, I told them that I can't, you know, I need more often $126. And they said, well, you got more than what most people are going to get. And this $960 billion that they're talking about that Maryland got is not really, you know, that much compared to, you know, what we're doing. And you got, you know, the best deal. And I'm like, but I'm still going to be facing the same thing come mid-year.
Right.
And they're like, well, you know.
Well, let me just say this, Darnell. A couple things. One is the agreement has actually not been filed in federal court yet. What's going to happen here is the announcement's been made that a deal has been reached. It has not actually been filed. The consent order has not been filed in federal district court in the District of Columbia as of yet. It should be within the next week or two. And at that time, the wheels will start to turn on this particular situation. From what you just, they're wrong, by the way, about the amount of money and whoever you spoke with. But what happens, it sounds like just from your comments that you're a few months behind, and which puts you into actually the category of somebody who they consider to be on the brink of foreclosure. Delinquent on payments, there's a set of criteria, which sounds like you satisfy just from the information that you just shared. There's actually $809 million just for people in Maryland, for people in your situation. And because your loan was serviced by Wells Fargo, you would be one of those people that would be eligible for actually principal reduction. 60% of the $809 million has to go, at least 60% of that money has to go to principal reduction. So what you just did was refinance, and your payment went down a little bit because it sounds like your interest rate went down a little bit. But you're actually going to be in better condition once this deal is finalized and monitored in federal court because you'll be able to get principal reduction so that your negative equity in your home, that is the amount that your loan is for, will be more consistent with the amount of the actual value of your house.
And well, Darnell, for people like Darnell, where do they go?
So it's a great question, Mark. And it's there's a lot of, you know, there's a couple avenues we're looking at. One is things like this, getting people to understand that this agreement has been reached and that if their loan has been serviced by one of these five major banks, that they would be eligible for relief. It will actually be incumbent on the banks to contact the people because they have their statements. They're the ones that have been dealing with them. They will know who's eligible under which of the three different pools of money resources that have been made available to folks. They're charged with contacting those people. So one thing can happen is they get the information like Darnell, who got a call from his mother, girlfriend, whatever, and reaches out to Wells Fargo. Second is Wells Fargo will actually reach out to them, and they have an economic incentive to identify folks. But we are very aware that these are people who have been running away from the banks for years. They're not that interested in hearing from them on the phone or getting their mail. We at the Office of the Attorney General are also going to try and contact them individually and say, look, we're on your side. Here's who you need to call. You are eligible for relief in terms of either a reduction in interest payment or principal reduction, depending on your particular situation.
You're hearing Doug Ganser, Attorney General of the State of Maryland. We're talking about the $25 billion deal made with banks. How does it affect Marylanders? What are the ramifications politically? We'll come to some of those as well during the course of our hour. We're now also joined by Marceline White.
Good evening.
Welcome. Good to have you with us. Marceline is Executive Director of the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition. Good to have you in the studio. Did you want to make a comment before we jump back to our calls?
Sure. I simply want to say that from the consumer rights perspective, we thought this was a good deal. We were happy that Maryland's Attorney General was very involved in this deal and played a strong role. And we think that it's an important first step in rectifying the housing crisis. And I think that's the most important thing from our perspective, is this is the beginning, not the end. And we want to make sure that everyone knows this is the first opportunity we have to really get a handle on the housing crisis that has devastated so many families in Maryland. So we're happy to support them and participate.
That's exactly right. It's literally a down payment and a first step in a long series of, as we mentioned already, the securitization cases, the criminal indictments, the MERS cases, the fair housing cases. I mean, these are all things that we expect to come down the road, as well as bringing in the next nine banks. And then hopefully having a structure, a blueprint for an ultimate settlement or a resolution with the Fannie and Freddie cases as well.
Well, there's a question I want to ask about that, what two you just said, what it means to be a beginning and an end and what it means to be a down payment. But let me go to the phones first, let folks come in, and we'll come back to those questions. 410-319-8888. And Darren, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi, Darren. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, let me say finally, because this really is the number one issue that's affecting citizens in the state of Maryland. Not marriage equality, but we seem to have a president who the banks are controlling, a governor in Maryland who the banks are controlling, and from my perspective, an attorney general who are abdicating their responsibility. When we talk about Marriage Equality Protection Act, but not Homeowners and Banking Equality and Protection Act right now. And I think it's interesting that here you come on a predominantly Morgan State University HBCU. When you're in court challenging the HBCUs for equal funding and equality funding, and you're challenging again or charging robo-callers in terms of Julius Henson and Mr. Sherrick, but I believe their robo-signings have been more damaging to the black community and minority communities in Baltimore City and Prince George's County than the robo-calls could have ever done. So it just, to me, it slaps off hypocrisy that there would be a settlement. When we look back historically in New York City, the sheriff of Wall Street, Elliot Spitzer, he charged those individuals, and many of them are in jail. This is why they had to remove Elliot Spitzer. Even the former governor of Illinois, Rob Blagojevich, said to the Bank of America, you got TARP money, but yet you refused to finance the store, Republic Windows and Door. And, of course, we know what happened to Rob Blagojevich. But I just think we got some serious issues that we're looking to settle, and those homeowners will only receive between an average of $1,700 to $2,000. What about the children of those who are losing their homes, since we have a governor and attorney general concerned about the children of those who are same-sex marriage partners? But what about the children of those who are now been put out of their homes, and that wealth cannot be passed on to the generations to come?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of issues that you raise. I'd like to focus on the one that we're talking about today, which is the abdication of responsibility regarding the banks. I mean, I would respectfully disagree. I think being able to bring back directly to people in their homes that are on the brink of foreclosure, have been foreclosed upon, or are underwater, almost $1 billion sort of defies the very notion of being of abdicating responsibility. In fact, it's taking on the banks. I'm not beholden to any bank. They don't do anything for me. So it's not an issue. And I think that I totally agree with your comment that this is what is affecting the people of the state of Maryland. And you actually mentioned Prince George's County. 1/3 of all the foreclosure cases that happened in Maryland and of the people that will be receiving this money actually do live in Prince George's County. It disproportionately affected that county as well. In terms of the other social issues that you may or may not agree with, you know, those are issues that are being debated down in Annapolis. I'm not a legislator, so I really I'm not really focused on that. We're just trying to do this from a legal perspective. The last thing I'd answer is Spitzer and Begovic, or whatever his name is, took care of themselves. That's how they got removed from office.
I'm just going to add in one thing, Darren. You are right that when you look at the subprime lending in particular and those exotic, toxic kinds of mortgages and loans we saw, like the adjustable rate mortgages, those were marketed and predominantly found in areas like Prince George's County and Baltimore City. One of the things that the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition is going to be doing is trying to hold the bank's feet to the fire. We're launching a petition drive tomorrow. We're trying to collect at least 1,000 signatures, asking the banks that are part of the settlement to roll out their principal reduction programs, which we think are the most important, as soon as possible. They have a timeline to do it. We'd love to see it within the next 30 days, because what we know is that 6,000, 8,000 families a month receive notices of intent to foreclose, meaning that they're at risk of losing their homes. So the sooner the banks can get these in place, we're asking them to do it by March 15th, the sooner people can get into the process of trying to save their homes and getting these principal reductions, which really are the best way for families to have an affordable loan. So you can go to our website and look at the petition and share it with your friends. But as soon as we get the signatures, we'll be trying to meet with the bank presidents and, again, making sure that they put their money and actually their actions where their mouths have been so far.
Now, just one of the things that Darren talked about, thought about as soon as I read this deal and was reading all the articles, was something that I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but the Attorney General of the United States was saying how the banks and their bundling and pushing these mortgages and have destroyed and foreclosing on people, destroyed not just families but entire communities.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that just in a deeply political and human sense that they've gotten away with a lot. I mean that so they're giving us $25 billion. Some people say that's money they've already just put aside and doesn't really affect the banks that deeply. They put that money aside in case this happened. The issue is that if I robbed a bank and you or one of your colleagues in the state attorney's office are going to prosecute me and put me in jail. But if a bank robs us, they fly down to the Bahamas and sit in their $100 million house and just live their life. So that's the part of this deal that many people don't get, which is why is that happening? Why are the investigations not taking place to go after the people who run those banks who did all this to our communities?
And the fact that – and I totally understand what you're saying and I agree with it, which is why I mentioned earlier that the state attorneys general are basically preempted from most investigations and prosecutions of national banks, which is what was so attractive to us on this offer. We took this very small sliver of jurisdiction and were able to expand it to such a point where we were able to get this much money. It's not there's always more money, and there's no question that there's a lot more to come. And there have been some criminal cases there's certainly a lot of criminal cases being investigated, and I think there will be much more to come. And there's obviously we've gone after and prosecuted criminally people in Maryland, over these past few years that have been doing this exact thing, targeting in terms of subprime lending. We put people in jail. Metropolitan Dream Homes, a big case in Prince George's County, $72 million worth of homes, basic Ponzi scheme, predatory lending and subprime lending. We put people in jail. So there's a lot of that going on. I think that the bundling that you just mentioned, that's the piece that's going to have to come out of New York and some of the big states that have the banks located. We don't have the national banks here that are our headquarters here to be able to bring those cases. And the final point I'd make is one that you just made, which is, we're all very sympathetic and have a deep understanding. I mean, we're sort of all on the same side here in terms of the families. This isn't the repo man coming to take your TV. This is your home, where you live with your children who come home from school and the furniture's on the front lawn. And we have to remember that. But you talked about how it affects all of us. And we see how the foreclosure crisis affected the economy in general. But, you have to also remember, they say, and I don't know if the statistics bear this out, but every house that's foreclosed upon in a neighborhood brings every other house value down in that neighborhood $5,000 to $10,000. And so you have this inventory of homes that from the foreclosure as a result of the banks, and it does indeed affect all of us.
You're about to say something, Marcelina?
I was just going to say that I think the anger is justified and understandable, but I do think that there's still certainly opportunities to pursue criminal cases against these banks within the jurisdiction that's available. And so I think people are
looking
at this.
Where and how do you see that?
with the securitization. As a matter of fact, that's an issue where people can start investigations and, again, take the lead from New York, because some of it depends on where the attorney generals have jurisdiction and where they don't, and where there's federal rules that preempt that. So, again, I think it's important to look at this as a first step, and certainly from a consumer advocacy perspective, we'll be continuing to talk to the AG if we don't see second and third and fourth steps. And I think there's been broad agreement that there needs to be many, many more steps. This is the beginning.
And the federal government needs to get involved. I mean, these are federal – these are national banks, and the U.S. Attorney's offices around the country, I think particularly Southern District of New York, which has a long tradition of bringing these kinds of cases, I think you'll see them get involved as well.
Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Let me tell you who's up on best. You guys can hold on. Roy's going to come next, then Rodney, then William, then Leo have called in that order. You'll be the next four callers up. 410-319-8888. Well, let's just take a break, because it looks like we've got 90 seconds to break. So we'll come right back. As soon as we return, we'll go right to your question, Roy, and then hit Rodney, then hit William, then hit Leo. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Attorney General Gansler and Marceline White from Consumer Rights Coalition. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. on the way back to our conversation, I have to remind you, WEAA invites you to our Zimbabwe Shona Stone exhibition right here in our studios. It runs to the end of February and is sponsored by AXA Advisors. The exhibition is courtesy of Zimbabwe Gallery, Colin L. Thompson, owner. The exhibition is open to the public weekdays between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Evening appointments are available. For more information, 443-885-3564. Or go to WEAA.org. We are here in the studio with Maryland Attorney General Doug Gansler and Marceline White, who's Executive Director of the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition, talking about the $25 billion deal cut with banks. How will it affect Marylanders? As I promised, right to the phones at 410-319-8888. And Roy, you're on the air. Roy, you're on the air.
Here, how are you?
Very well. Welcome.
Good, good. First off, I want to commend you, Attorney General Gansler, on the efforts that you and all the AGs have done with bringing this settlement to light. And I'm a housing counselor here in Baltimore City, so I'm a pretty busy young man at the moment. And I wanted to ask you, I know that this program or this settlement, it does not address the Fannie and Freddie Mac loans that are currently part of the makeup of loan programs, but our clientele consists mostly of FHA borrowers. How does this program help them, if at all?
It really doesn't, unfortunately, because we talked about the jurisdiction again. That's going to be the federal piece that hopefully comes later in terms of the Fannie and the Freddie. They're quasi-governmental agencies. They were started by the Congress and that kind of thing. So I think that they're going to be coming down the road, we hope. I mean, our next thing is to go after the next nine banks. So hopefully we'll be at least encompassing and getting those people in there. I also appreciate that you commended me. I want to commend you, if I could, Roy, because housing counselors, you know, there's a – one of the programs that has been talked about is as part of the settlement is that the state of Maryland will get a sum of money at $62 million, 10% of that will be deemed to be civil penalties that will go to the general fund. There's another $56 million that will be used for housing-related projects to help people, again, that are on the brink of foreclosure or underwater and so forth. Housing counseling is the one thing that has been proven to be very, very effective. There are studies that show that if somebody is going through a loan modification or meeting with the bank and they have a housing counselor with them, they're in 6 months, they're 70% likely to still be in that home. If they made the same deal without the housing counselor, they're 20% likely to be in that home. So we want to make sure that we fortify the HOPE program that the state of Maryland already has going and make sure that housing counselors around the state get the adequate resources that they need so they can help people to make the right decisions and not get taken advantage of by the banks.
And I just want to add one thing. I think you're absolutely right that for people who have Fannie and Freddie FHA loans, this is not a solution for them. I do want to say that Congressman Cummings has been a strong, strong advocate of pushing the FHA to embrace principal reduction. He's done it through the House Oversight Committee and in other ways, but we need to hear from homeowners, and they need to hear that this is important. There's been a lot of research showing that principal reduction is going to be the best way to stabilize the housing market and keep people in their homes. And right now with the foreclosure prices, they're already discounting a lot of times at about 42%. So the logical solution is to discount it at an affordable rate for people in their home and say, and keep them there. So we hope that that's the next big push that people do nationally to get Fannie and Freddie to embrace the principal reduction programs.
So what does it mean? Well, just a real quick follow-up to Roy. So I'm going to get right to Rodney. That $62.5 million of this particular settlement that we've made here in the state of Maryland will be going to hire more counselors and for legal assistance. What does that mean? I mean, I know what hiring counselors mean. But what is that? What are we talking about?
So exactly? There's four different pools of resources here available to Maryland, to Maryland homeowners. There's an $809 million. That's the big one. That's for people who are delinquent or on the brink of foreclosure, like our first caller, Darnell, who is behind in their payments. They're really about to go into foreclosure. They 60% of that $809 million has to be used for, at least 60% has to be used for principal reduction that was just talked about, and loan modification. There's another group of people who are current on their payments, but they're what we call underwater. That is, their loan value is through criteria. There's certain criteria out there where the loan value is significantly higher than the value of the home. And so the loan, what they would typically not be able to get refinancing.
Right.
But that $64 million pool will allow them to get refinancing and pay at an interest rate consistent with what's available today, which is about the lowest ever, or certainly in recent times. There's another $24 million that will go to people who have been foreclosed upon. That is, they're no longer in their homes. They were serviced by one of these five banks, and they'll get a one-time check. The last resource is $62 million that doesn't go to the Attorney General's office, but it's directed by the Attorney General in each of the states to be used for housing-related projects, like, for example, hiring more housing counselors, getting legal assistance for folks. Some folks lost their credit rating
Right. Solely
because of this. They weren't able to pay because of the conduct of the banks. Not that they were unable to pay their credit cards, but they weren't able to pay their house. We need to be able to restore that so that doesn't stay with them for the rest of their lives, for example.
I mean, I got to get to the callers here, but this what you just said is, I think, rankling a lot of our listeners and a lot of people in the community, that if, as the Attorney General was saying, that maybe the crime here was foreclosing on people and pushing them out of their homes, destroying people's lives, communities, etc., and all they're going to get is $1,000 to $2,000? I mean, that to me is like, it's almost like a slap in the face, like, you know, that you lose your home, you lose everything you've had, well, we'll give you $1,000.
Well, they actually, you're right, and I understand the sentiment there. They get $1,800 to $2,000, but that is money that they would not have gotten but for what the Attorney General's did. It has nothing to do with their individual claims. They can bring their individual claims. They're no worse position than they were before this, other than
but
they
isn't
now
isn't that
have,
where, like, the U.S. Attorney General and some of the other U.S. attorneys or folks in New York where the banks are headquartered, or in Charlotte, should have taken the banks and gone after them? Because that to me, is the criminal action of the banks, destroying people's lives in America. That wasn't even touched.
Well, what's criminal... So there's certain fraud that seems – there's fraud and then there's criminal fraud. And to show that any of what in terms of origination and servicing that was actually criminal here is going to be very different than what occurred. In other words, if they are misrepresenting or they're targeting minorities, it's illegal, and that's why they're going to pay $25 billion. But most of the conduct doesn't rise to the level of criminal conduct with a mens rea and so forth. Now, the individual person who was foreclosed upon, who's now getting an $1,800 to $2,000 check that they otherwise would not have gotten, is, again, in no worse position. They can still bring their own claim. The Attorney General doesn't bring private lawsuits on behalf of any particular individual. We can't go and say, hey, Mark Steiner, you got thrown out of your house.
But people could bring – collect.
They can bring class actions.
They can bring class actions.
Actually, I mean, the fact that they – I mean, I just think – it just rankles me a lot that we have all these people thrown out of their homes. They're getting $1,800 bucks, and I mean, it's...
Well, it should rank you more if they got zero.
Obscene. Well, they should... No, to me, that's not the argument. The argument is that somebody should be going and doing serious investigations of these banks and then going after them for what they did to the American people.
And that's exactly what has happened, and this is a first step down the road to that, and it's at a pretty heavy cost to the banks at over $25 billion, and there's going to be further cases, and particularly the securitizations we mentioned and some of the other claims, including criminal indictments. This is involving, and it's very difficult, by the way, as we've found, to find the person who, but for the conduct of the banks, that is, but for, say, for example, the robo-signing, would not have been foreclosed upon. And then to take those people and aggregate them to the level where you're going to get $960 million would be extremely difficult. That all said, we still don't have the ability to, on behalf of one person, to bring private lawsuits. All we can do is this sort of amorphous state claim, which is pretty good to get almost $1 billion under that claim.
So did you want to say much?
Yeah, I was just going to say I understand how rankling it is. I mean, for us, we talk about real accountability. If a homeowner misses a payment, you know, according to the banks, they're out on the street. But you want to see that same kind of accountability for the banks, and you want to have consequences that are actually meaningful for them that hurt. I think this, I mean, financial consequences that they feel, so it will reform behavior. It's enough of a disincentive that they won't do this again. I think this is a good start. But again, we want to see more of this. And I think through the securitization and the other claims, we would hope that there's continuing investigations looking at whether it is fraud or criminal fraud, and the, you know, suits are continued to be brought to bear both by individual lawyers and by the attorneys general when they are able to, within their purview, to hold them accountable, because they shouldn't get off scot-free. So or with a little slap on the wrist.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. 410-319-8888. Rodney, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The reason I was calling, I see three phases to the fraud that was committed. First in origination, again in securitization, and then in servicing. But my question to the Attorney General is Mears legal under Maryland state law? And if not, why are Maryland courts foreclosing on people who are under Mears? Or why aren't we progressively going after those if it's not recognized by Maryland state law that committed the fraud under the origination to use Mears?
So this is a very complicated area. The MERS claims are very complicated, and I'm just, you know, I'm getting my arms around it myself. But basically what it is, for those listeners who aren't familiar with the MERS system, it's basically a computerized system that was put together by the banks, which was what they did wrong. It was they were transferring the title to the property. Is, you know, you go, somebody originates a loan, they then sell it, and it gets sold and sold and sold and sold. Under the MERS, it was all being pushed around basically by computer, and the documentation wasn't following it. In Massachusetts, which is where there's already been a big MERS claim brought by the Attorney General there, their state law says that is unacceptable. They actually have to go back and redo every foreclosure they've had. The Maryland court has said, no, as long as it is, you can identify where that came from, those were proper transfers in terms of the servicing. So we are what they did, they violated the rules of MERS in Maryland, and we may be able to bring a case there and get penalties for that. But we won't be able to do the kind of MERS claim they do in Massachusetts because of the laws that are in place in a court of appeals case here in Maryland.
I was just going to say, I lobby in Annapolis in addition to doing some research, and we've been talking to consumers and to legislators there, and there have been ideas of trying to change state law, but at least last year those attempts didn't pass.
Rodney, thanks. It's a great question, Rodney, and we'll pursue and look at as this develops over the coming months.
The problem is, and the bottom line, I guess, to Rodney's question is that because of the law we have here involving MERS, you can't show individual damage to anybody from the MERS system in Maryland under the law.
410-319-8888. And William, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Mark, Mr. Steiner.
Good evening.
Good to see you again. My wife and I went to a counselor last year and also an accountant, and we doing our budget, we decided to pay our bills weekly. and because we get paid alternate weeks, every 2 weeks. So mm-hmm. we basically pay our water bill weekly, or because we can do it electronically, a water bill, a gas bill, and also we started doing our mortgages. And what I noticed in the mortgage statement, they always give you a documentation of the principal, but a lot of the payment goes towards interest, but there is no documentation of how much interest, how much the interest balance is. So what I noticed in the last year or so, a small portion would go to principal and a large portion would go to interest. But when I started paying it weekly in four equal payments, everything goes towards interest and nothing goes towards the principal. So is there some sort of a law that says you have to, the interest cannot be hidden? You know, to me, it's like a hidden fact figure that you cannot really see. You know what you at. Like if you buy a car, it tells you what the interest is, and you can see the actual figure. And if the banks have all the electronics, as we, you know, we can go to the moon. We have all the instantaneous electronics,
right,
which can tell you what the actual principal interest balance daily would be, or weekly, or whatever, you know, or monthly. You should be able to have some sort of a balance on your statement.
Right, right.
Have you ever asked the bank for that information, or to be able to put that on there? Because you should be able to, you should be entitled to know what portion of your payment is going to principal vis-a-vis interest.
Well, it usually shows that. In the last couple of years, it showed it. It showed a small portion, you know,
right,
like maybe $30 towards principal and $360 towards interest, you know. So, but in the last, I'd say the last 6 months or so, everything is going towards interest.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that problem. Might be the way that your loan is structured. I haven't heard of that scenario. It's a little bit different than what we're discussing today,
but it's
no less important. And I think my own advice would be to call the bank and try and remedy that so that you want more transparency rather than less.
Right. The lady was speaking about principal reduction, but
right,
you also should have interest reduction also. You know, I mean, you should include that because that's part of the, it's not one thing separate from the other.
Right. There's two different components of this. There's principal reduction is part of the settlement in terms of for people who are on the brink of foreclosure. The interest reduction really applies more to folks who are up to date on their payments, whether it's weekly or monthly, but have a large negative equity in their home. And you're absolutely right. Both are important, and they're important to different people. And, of course, it depends on the structure of your loan and the value of your house.
So do you think about that, Marceline?
I just know that talking to housing counselors and others we work with, that lots of people have had very different kinds of contracts, and there's been a lot of confusion. I mean, part through the servicing, but also when people have moved from servicer to servicer. So I haven't encountered that situation myself, but I know housing counselors who've had similar kinds of experiences. And I think, again, going forward, you should certainly be able to know what the interest is vis-a-vis the principal. And I hope that the servicing standards that these five banks are going to agree to will help create a clear and transparent process, because that's what all homeowners need.
410-319-8888. We're here with Doug Gansler, who is Maryland's Attorney General, who helped sign the deal, the $25 billion deal with the banks. Almost $1 billion coming to the state of Maryland. In a minute, we're going to talk about how that's divvied up and what you can do and what you can expect. Marceline White is with us. She's the Executive Director of the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition. 410-319-8888 is the number, because this affects a lot of us out here, whether you're underwater or whether you need to have your principal reduced, dealing with who makes those decisions and how. 410-319-8888 is the number. And Leo in Baltimore, you're on the air. Got Leo up there? Hi, Leo. Leo?
Yes, good evening, Mark Steiner. How are you?
Well, welcome,
and,
Leo.
Doug Gansler and the lady.
Marceline White.
Well, I just simply have a question, Mr. Gansler, with respect to historically black colleges and universities. It appears to, and my alma mater is Morgan State University. It was a college when I went there in the 60s. But I'm concerned about the posture the state has taken with respect to this litigation that's going forward in the federal courts right now. And it appears to many of us that you and our governor, Martin O'Malley, have in effect attacked or are attacking historically black colleges and universities, and that you don't, in fact, feel that we have the right to exist. I understand there was a written agreement that would ensure equitable and full funding for black institutions that was ignored by the state. And I want you to deliberate a little on that. Tell us why there should be a trial when, in fact, this matter should not have ever gone to trial. You should have done the right thing in the first place.
Well,
tell us about it.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. I'm actually a huge supporter of historically black colleges and universities. Always have been, always will be.
Why are we in court?
Because we are our client is the state of Maryland and the governor and the legislature and the different funding agencies of the state. And it's been a historical issue that was brought. Somebody brought a case, a group brought a case saying that the funding was inadequate. The state feels that it was not inadequate. Our job is we're the lawyers. We get put in a position where we defend the state. So right now the case is in court, and I can't really, obviously for that very reason, can't comment too much on the case and the facts of the case. But I can say, you know, our job is when the state makes a policy decision and, you know, if the two sides are unable to come to a settlement agreement, then our job is to litigate on behalf of the state. That's what we, by constitution, I have to do. And we have two lawyers that are representing the state in the case that are very fair. They both happen to be African American in this case, and they're both very fair lawyers. And both sides are bringing the issues to the fore, and a judge will make a decision. If the judge feels that the funding has been inadequate, then the state's going to have to fix that. If the judge feels that it's been either adequate or more than adequate, then that'll be rendered too in the judge's decision. We'll have to wait and see what happens there. But my role is often confused. We don't make the policies. We're not policy decision makers in the Attorney General's office. We have clients, which is to represent the state in their whenever they're sued.
Leo, thanks. Good question. And we're just writing about that today. And I think that's something that we're going to be taking up in the next couple of weeks on several shows is just dealing with this issue on HBCUs and this lawsuit. 410-319-8888 is the number here, and Reggie, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Reggie, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about private mortgage insurance. I was under the impression that once you hit 80% on loan value, that it would come off automatically. But that's apparently not the case, and in my case, they're asking to do a re-evaluation. So can you just speak to what my rights are as a Maryland resident?
I would suggest that you contact our office at the Attorney General's office. There's a little bit different insurance issue. We do represent we represent all the state agencies. We represent the Maryland Insurance Administration as well. But you should give our office a call at 410-576-6300. That's 410-576-6300, which, by the way, and incidentally, we set up a hotline regarding the mortgage settlement that we've been talking about. And, folks, we've had over 1,000 calls to that number involving this case. But you should call them and tell them your particular situation and see if they can help you out with that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let's go to Mike in Harford County.
Hi.
Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Hi, I'm in Harford County. We're in Maryland. We have a mortgage, and we've never been late on a single mortgage payment. We've had our house for coming up on 8 years, and we want to refinance to take advantage of the low interest rate, but the banks say we can't refinance because we're upside down. There's no value in our house because of the market, and we feel stuck because we can't refinance, but we've done everything right. We've never missed the payment in 8 years, and we feel like we're have no place to go, and we're wondering, is there some way we can take advantage of some of this Maryland funds you say that will be available, or what do we do in our case?
If your loan was serviced by one of the five major national banks, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, Citi, GMAC.
Wachovia.
Well, Wachovia is now Wells Fargo, so you should be eligible for that fund. That's a $64 million available monies, which do exactly what you're talking about. You're exactly eligible for this, which is that you will be able to refinance at a lower interest rate, at today's interest rates, which will bring down your payments significantly. You're what they call underwater. You said it exactly, and so you should be able. I wouldn't call right now because the agreement hasn't been filed in federal court. But in 2 or 3 weeks, you should be able to call in to your bank, which is now Wells Fargo, and be able to get your refinancing done. You're exactly the kind of person who this is focused on.
Now, is there a name for that? When I call in and say, I need the such and such refi, like
What I would do is go ahead and call our office at 410-576-6300. You'll get the hotline, and we'll get your name and get you, make sure that we contact you as well as the bank should contact you. But you should be able to go in and say, you know, you heard about the settlement and you want to avail yourself of the refinancing. And it's in their interest. This is one of these rare deals where it's in their interest to help you because they want to spend down the settlement money. They want to get down the $1 billion down to zero as quickly as they can so that it doesn't get higher through penalties that as part of the agreement. So they want to help you. And by the way, once they do that, you're more likely to be able to stay in your home, and it's the fair and the right thing to do, which is why we reached this agreement.
Marcin, do you have something to add to that?
Just two things. The Attorney General's right. The two things I'd like to say is that because people have been waiting a long time and in your situation and stuck, that's why we're really pushing the banks, even though the agreement isn't signed yet, to roll something out within the next month because there are so many families that have been hanging on that the sooner they can get these programs in place, the sooner you can start availing yourself of that opportunity and relief. And it is in their interest. And the other thing I'd like to say is that once they spend the money down and these credits down that they need to spend, we want to see them continue these kinds of programs. We don't want it to end once their credits end, both the principal reduction and the refinancing. And that's one of the things we're going to be advocating for with our petitions and with other outreach to say that once they start these programs, we want to see them continue.
But if it's not one of those five major banks, it doesn't affect you.
We're focusing on the five major.
Right. For right now, it's the five major banks. We anticipate with great optimism that there'll be the next nine banks. So that'll be really almost all of the non-Freddie and Fannie loans should have something like this available to them soon.
We don't have time for any more calls, but we will come back to this, and we hope that the Attorney General will come back and we'll get Marcy and others to come back to continue this conversation because I think it's really important.
I would as well. Thanks.
Thank you all so much. And folks, we will stay on top of this because it's all of us. We're on this together. We all have mortgages. Are wrestling with the same issues that everyone else is. So, Doug Andrews, Maryland's Attorney General. Marcin White is Executive Director of the Maryland Consumer Rights Coalition. All the information for both our offices will be on our website. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll be talking with Kwame Kwayama, the new Artistic Director of Center Stage, and go back in history, look at Ira Aldridge and more. Stay with us.